Hello and welcome to Match Made in Seven, a new podcast series from Northeast-based comedy collective Your Aunt Fanny. During one particularly painful megabus journey last year, seven Fannies had the sudden realization that there were also seven deadly sins: megabus madness or cosmic coincidence. In this debut series, we will hilariously probe each of the seven deadly sins and what it means to be a young woman or non-binary person partial to one or more of them. Settle in for a pairing of original sketches and frank chat as we invite you into our Fanny universe, where everyone is in on the joke. Before we start, a heads up, this episode will contain strong language, so don't listen to it in the car with your kids in the back, unless you're a colossal scream. Episode 6. Pride. Pride is what we'll be talking about today.
Nice.
I am your host, Izzy, and I am here with
Lydia
Brogan.
Jackie.
Thank you for joining me.
You're welcome.
So we'll start with the Oxford Dictionary definition of what pride is. Mm. And pride actually has 5 definitions.
Bloody
greedy.
Hell.
Greedy.
It is. So the first one is a feeling of deep pleasure or satisfaction derived from one's own achievements, the achievements of those with whom one is closely associated or form qualities or possessions that are widely admired.
That's long, that.
Yeah. The second one is consciousness of one's own dignity. So,
dignity's good.
Dignity.
Like on that.
Yeah. The third one is confidence and self-respect as expressed by members of a group, typically one that has been socially marginalized on the basis of their shared identity, culture, and experience. So, like the L's, the B's, the G's, and the T's, etc. Finally, my favourite, a group of lions.
Oh, yeah. A pride of lions.
Can't forget about that. A group of lions.
Simba.
So it comes from late Old English, excessive self-esteem.
Okay. Oh, okay. So that sounds quite negative, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Cocky kind of.
Yeah. This is a really interesting one because I think there is so many negative things to say about it and there are so many positive things to say about it.
Yeah.
Because it's really quite a broad thing, isn't it? Pride.
It is, yeah.
It's a really broad thing.
It is. Because you've got like pride as in like, you know, you're proud of yourself and you take pride in yourself and your own achievements. And then pride as in like, I'm proud of who I am. And then, pride as in gay pride, and then pride as in lions. I had a little look at what the Christians have to say about it.
Oh, tell us what the Christians have to say about it.
So pride in the Bible is basically like spoken about as the root of all sin. Because when you're being proud, you don't have room for God or Jesus in your mind. And they're always talking about being humble over being proud.
Oh, right.
God opposes the proud but gives grace to the humble.
Mm.
That's written by 2 different men in the Bible.
Matthew and Mark?
No, James and Peter.
James and Peter, man.
I know the one.
Of course it was, I remember now.
I remember him saying,
That is so James.
So Peter.
Peter, what a fucking laugh.
Rolls off his tongue.
Oh, bless them.
So they're basically saying that like there's a huge difference between pride and having pride within yourself and being humble, and like you can be proud of yourself but in a quiet way. That's how the Christians would like you to behave.
So then you're not, I guess you are proud of yourself but you're not allowed to tell anyone about it.
Yeah.
Keep it to yourself, love. Yeah.
So no showing off.
Showing off. You've got to be humble.
I think this could be the sin that has the most kind of associated with it. It's almost a little bit difficult to know where to start, actually.
Well, I've made a list.
And you should be very proud of that.
Oh, yes, be proud. Be
proud of your list, baby.
And you know what? Shout about it. I don't care what the Bible says.
Well, I'll tell you all about it now, right? So, on my list, first one is being a woman, spelt with an X. Mm-hmm. Being working class. Being from the north / northeast. Me being queer. A couple of other are queer. And being a fanny, just being us.
Yeah. Being a big old fanny.
Yeah, I think we're quite proud of being part of this group and what we all stand for and stuff.
Yeah, I'm incredibly proud when I think about our comedy and when I think about us putting our comedy on stage. Do you remember when we were in youth theatre and we it was when we did one of the previews at Live, and one of the pieces of audience feedback, like the majority of the audience feedback was, you know, blinding. but there was one or two that was negative, and one of them was
he was there. Fucking Staunton. Give us their name now.
Rogan from Wall's End.
No, well, they're anonymous, Brogan.
Shit.
I know. Cowards.
Tell it to me face.
But yeah, no, one of the comments was, I would have expected to see more positive female role models in the sketches, given that you're all young women.
It's interesting.
Which I found so funny. Oh, women being on stage and just doing what they think is funny, just like male comedians do. Mm. Apparently isn't enough. We need to be doing comedy that actually specifically, you know...
represents young women.
Represents and also provides kind of like example and, you know, provides... And like, you know what, you wouldn't bloody say that to a male comedy troupe, you wouldn't.
No. That's really interesting. So I wonder what their ideal show would look like. I know. Like who would the characters be?
It'd be loads of sketches about like suffragettes and stuff.
It wouldn't be funny, it'd be depressing.
I can't think of a way that would be funny though. If it was all like just people you were like, oh, they're put together. They like go to bed by 10, don't they? Like,
hilarious.
It didn't get to me because I was like, well, they just don't get it. Like, because actually what's so brilliant about us is that we're a group of lasses making comedy and we just make what we think's funny just in the same way that a group of men would. And like that's powerful enough in of itself.
Yeah.
Us being on stage is enough of a message, and I'm endlessly proud of that.
Yeah, I think it reminds me a bit of on a larger scale when Phoebe Waller-Bridge did the second season of Fleabag, and there was an article in The Guardian that was said Fleabag is only for posh girls. And the article was really bizarre because it was saying things like, well, Fleabag's godmother is an artist, which, you know, it just wouldn't be practical because, you know, she'd have to have a cafe job to sustain that. And it was like, it was so frustrating to read because the whole point of that godmother character is that she is over the top and that she's an artist who has the sexhibition.
The point of her is her privilege.
Yeah, of course. And it's like, Phoebe Waller-Bridge, yes, of course, she's a very middle, upper class woman, but it's also not her job to represent all women.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's not for her to tell working class stories either. You know, and if she wanted to, of course, like, that's fine, but she'd have to do it in a way that was nurturing. And she wasn't trying to write that either.
You'd be more pissed off if she was trying to show what a working class life was like when she's not working class. Like, that would offend me more.
Exactly, yeah. And also just to be like, oh, working class people can't understand what the middle class, upper class experience is, just quite stupid. Classist in itself.
It also annoys me that, like, you can't just watch things for enjoyment anymore. It's like, it's almost like you're expected to get something quite significant from things. Like almost like a moral... I don't know, like a lifestyle change. Like, you watch something and you think,
like a fable.
That's opened my eyes. I'm going to, And it's like, you can't just watch something and be like, that was dead funny. That was dead good. Oh, I feel good now. It's always got to be like taken away and like pulled apart and being like, well, what did you mean by that? Well, that's not showing a good example of this. And it's why can't I just watch it for the laughs? Like,
what else are you proud to be?
Northern.
Oh, aye.
Why are you proud to be Northern?
I was going to bring this up, actually, because I feel the Northeast is a very proud place. Mm-hmm. Like, I think you'd struggle to find someone who wasn't proud of being around here. And I think we were saying the other day, like, people who come here, like, for uni, end up staying a lot of the time.
Yeah.
And I think because the people are so nice and everyone's just sound. And, yeah, I definitely think there's a real feeling of pride in our region, more so than other places.
Why do you think that is?
I really don't know, to be honest. Like, I have friends who I speak to who are from different cities and stuff, and they're less attached to their region than I am, and I always find that a bit sad, and I'm a bit like, I will just rave about Newcastle and the northeast. I'll be like, oh, like, come round and we'll go to the beach, and then we'll go to town, and then we'll do this, and it's like, we'll go to this theatre, this regional theatre. And they're not so attached to it. Like, it's not so much of a personal thing for them. It's like they were just born there, like, and they're probably just going to leave eventually.
Yeah.
And there's no real attachment. So I'm not sure why there's a big sense of pride around here. Any ideas why that might be?
When I think about pride, it's often very much rooted in oppression, if that makes sense. I think it's like black people and people of colour are very often proud to be black people and people of colour, and that's because they face so much oppression but are still, you know... And I think the Northeast, I think it faces oppression in a really different way, like... it's faced a lot of crap, you know, that it's, you know, Boris Johnson has pretty much openly said that he would frack the Northeast if he could. He doesn't know where Newcastle is. And I don't think other places, even in the North, have that. Like, I think because we've faced so much shit, and I think we're also, like, as a community, I think we're laughed at a lot. And I don't actually like that. I remember watching Alan Partridge. There was this Geordie character on it, and he just like just released because you couldn't understand what he was saying. But like, it wasn't funny. It was actually just taking the piss out of Geordies, and it was just done in a way that was like really unintelligent and really just like, oh, this is a community that I can shit on a little bit more, who are already shat on enough. And and I think Geordie Shore adds to that kind of,
it
really added to that rhetoric of like, the Northeast is just a place of pissheads and partying. And it is a place of pissheads and partying, and it's fucking sick. But there's like,
also
there's also so much more to it.
When I went to New Zealand, when I went traveling around New Zealand a couple of years ago, I remember like people being like, Are you from Liverpool? I was like, no. I'm like, oh, are you from Ireland? I was like, no. And they were like, oh, you're from Scotland? I was like, no. I'd be like, where are you from? I'd be like, well, from Gateshead, which is over the river from Newcastle. And be like, oh, Newcastle, where are you, man? I'd be like, oh, shut up, man.
It's like, crazy, New Zealand, so far away.
These are like European people as well, like New Zealand, but also Kiwis as well. And it's like, so if I said I was from Ireland, would you then be like, oh, top of the morning to you? Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, why? they probably would, to be honest.
But like, it's like, you know, as soon as you say, oh, I'm from Newcastle, you get that automatically, like, why I man, how are you, man? It's like, that we don't all talk like that. We don't always do Geordie Ryman slang every second of every day. Like,
I have to admit, I am very proud to be where I'm from, but I know that times in the past when I've been in London or I've been down south and someone's asked us where I'm from, and I do get a little bit like reluctant to tell them, because I feel like when you tell people that you're a Geordie, it kind of comes alongside a big bag of all the stereotypes that carries. And I'm like, and I almost have to be a bit like, oh, you know, not like Geordie Shore though, just really normal. And but it goes against what I've just said, sadly, because I know I am proud, but I do worry about meeting new people and the stereotypes that being a Geordie comes onto it.
So, like, I often feel quite an affinity with Liverpool. I think Liverpool. Geordies and Scousers have, like, such a... Like, Jackson was telling me that, like, our football fans always really get along. And and like, there's just a real kind of affinity between the two cities. And I think it's actually because Liverpool is a city that does have quite a similar story to us. I think it's different in the modern day because Geordies, I think, are probably stereotyped in a different way to Scousers. I think Geordies have a little bit more of a reputation of like being like pissheads.
Radgies.
Which I'd like, Scousers have got their own, like, you know, stereotypes that they deal with. But we do have that particular reputation of like, oh, we will get like pissed and like fall asleep in the street. And you're like, well, only once a month. Like, it's not every weekend. It's interesting because actually I think the Northeast and Newcastle and the surrounding areas there's still a hangover in certain ways, in ways where like communities where job losses were really felt are still, you know, some of the poorer communities. And like, I find it interesting that that's like the case kind of across the board in different northern towns and stuff, but like your present day kind of depends on like how well known your area is, and like, and that's not always a good thing or a bad thing, because if it's not very well known, people are like, oh, I've never heard of that, that's the arse end of nowhere. Or people have these like insane stereotypes about it. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And it's hard to contend with both.
I think that what you were saying just now was like about community, and like, that's another thing to be proud of, because I've found that the Northeast seems to have quite a good community bond. Like, everyone seems, you know, if you live in a smaller little village or whatever, like sort of like the surrounding areas of Newcastle. Mm-hmm. Like, if you're thinking about like Walker and Wall's End, like they're quite small, but everyone kind of knows each other and kind of like helps each other out. And like in Durham, where I used to live, there's like little mining villages which are still like so like close knit, and everyone knows each other and everyone goes to the same pub, and like, it's like a really nice like story, isn't it? Mm. That, like, we have that. And like, I know that other places have good community as well, but it's just something about like the Geordie community that feels really like homely and lovely, and not just to people who live here, but like, you know, people who come here and they're like, oh, yous are all so lovely. You know, I walked into a pub and I felt like I've been there like my whole life, kind of thing. And like, it's just really canny.
Just to subvert that slightly, I do love the community feel. I used to live in Heaton and I loved it because it felt like there was a lovely sense of community. However, moving back to my mum's, it's a much smaller place.
Yeah.
And it's a little bit like everybody knows everybody's business. Mm. Which, from going from Heaton, which was this gorgeous community, which like where you felt a sense of community, where people would help each other out, but there was also an element of privacy. Mm-hmm. And I've kind of gone to almost the opposite end, where you go down to the shop and you're like, oh, hello, primary school teacher. All right, yeah. Oh, cool. You know about that. Oh, cool. You know that we're getting a summer house. Oh, cool. I have a, oh, did you speak to me, ma'am? No, we just know you're getting a summer house. And yes, I think, although yes, it is lovely, that sense of community, I do also think that I know that I very much appreciate a little bit of privacy.
It depends on who you are, doesn't it?
Like, yeah.
Completely. I have to admit, I've had, like, you've just mentioned Wall's End there, because I'm from Wall's End, and there have been times where random people know random facts about me, and I have no idea how it's happened. Probably my mum. But, like, I'll be, like, walking my dog, and the guy who works in the park is like, hey, I heard about your day the other day. I can't believe that man said that to you. And I'm like,
who are you?
Thank you. Or they're like, hey, good luck on that new job next week. And I'm like, how do you know this? So it's kind of nice, but it is a little bit strange. So I know what you mean, Lydia.
Yeah. I think I just like romanticize it because, like, I don't know, I was born in Plymouth, which is in the southwest, and then I moved here when I was 4. And like, ever since, I've just wanted to be like, this is where I'm from. This is my home. Like, this is what I am. So I think that whenever I think of like the Northeast, it's always like, oh yeah, everyone loves each other and knows each other's business. And that's lovely, even though sometimes it's really not. Like,
I think it also depends, like, maybe how broad your like world is. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
This is something else that people don't really give credit to for the Northeast. It's a very like diverse place in terms of like the kind of like urban areas that people live in. You know, like Newcastle is an incredibly like cultural and linked up hub with the rest of the UK.
Yeah.
And I think we're really like lucky to kind of be part of the scene here and like be linked up to like the arts around the country through being linked to Newcastle. Mm-hmm. When I lived down in London, like a lot of the time people massively underestimated like what was going on in this region. And I was like, actually, like, I'm busy all the time. Like, there is so much going on, mm-hmm. like, and there is so much to be a part of. And yeah, like, I can have like quite a cosmopolitan city life and also have like a bit of a small town life as well, like by the coast, like next to, you know, with like smaller pubs where you're seeing people you went to school with and stuff. And like, I can have both. It's not actually that you get past Yorkshire and, you know, everything's grey and, you know, you kind of move for mining villages. It's actually that there's quite a variety of like places to live up here and communities to be part of. If anyone ever comes up to Newcastle, I kind of want to show them that variety. I want to show them Newcastle, but I also want to show them the coast. And I also want to show them that actually you're only like an hour's drive from some of the most gorgeous countryside you've ever seen.
Yeah.
And if you go over the river, like there's loads to see in like Gateshead and like Sunderland, yes. We will give it a mention.
Yes,
No, I'm joking. I like Sunderland. I really do.
I don't.
Keep it clean. And yeah, that's what I love about up here. And that's what I'm constantly like kind of proud to kind of inform people about.
Mm.
Yeah.
I love how this has turned into like a love story of the Northeast. Yeah.
Well, we knew it would. Can I say something else I'm really proud of? Like Northeastern wise.
I'll allow it.
Something I have a strong affection for is grandparents in this region. I really like the stories that can be passed on. I mean, that's particularly relevant for me. Like, I grew up with my nana, and that was a big...
I was going to say, I spoke about being, like, so jealous of everyone around me who's had, like, those lovely, stereotypical Geordie nanas and grandas that, like... Oh, I just love them.
Yeah, I'm the same as. So my mum's Irish and my dad's from Derby. So his parents live in Derby and my mum's parents have passed away. And I think having two parents that aren't from the region is really rare. Mm. And like my mum said that like when I was born, I was this like, so I was a massive baby. For reference, if you don't know Aunt Fanny, I'm the tallest, so I'm a woman and I'm 6 foot, which is very tall. So I was a very tall baby, being tall from birth. And, everyone just knew the story of this Irish woman in Crookcreek, where I'm from, with this massive baby. And she was on her own as well. So she would go to all these meetings, there'd be all these people who would have like an entourage of sisters, grandparents, aww, and like but she was kind of on her own and she was never bothered. And she doesn't mean this in any kind of pity me, it was so hard kind of way, but she just got on. I think I always get a bit of that grandparent envy.
Yeah.
But also I also don't see it as a massively like negative thing either, like
no, it would be nice to go around and have you know, have your stomach filled and get given 20 quid though, wouldn't
it? Yeah, it would be really nice, wouldn't it?
Lovely.
My granddad's dead sweet, like I'm an adult now, and every time I see them they will give us 20 quid and they'll say this is for sweets.
How many sweets can you buy with 20 quid?
Every single time they're like oh, hang on before I'm about to go, and they're like, they pull out their wallet or they go in the drawer and they're just like, yeah, it's 20 quid, get yourself some sweets. And I'm like, and to be honest, I do end up buying sweets.
Me and Lydia are leaving the room.
Me and Iz are just like, what is this?
I'm excited to be a Geordie nana.
Yeah. I don't know whether it's a specifically this region thing. I think it's a working class background thing. There is a connection you have with grandparents if they live in the same region as you, that is very, very special, because their grandparents probably will have picked them up from school, or they will have gone round to their grandparents after school for tea because their parents will have been working and all that. If your grandparents live round here, that they are like a part of your upbringing and that they like helped raise you. And that's something that like I've got a lot of affection for and that I've got a lot of love for. And it's something actually that I couldn't particularly, it took a little while for me to realise that that wasn't actually the norm, because when my nana my nana's passed away, but when she was ill, and when she did pass away, I noticed there was a difference between people from more middle-class backgrounds and people from more working-class backgrounds, how they, like, gave me their sympathies.
Yeah.
Mm. I noticed that actually some of my friends who were from more middle-class backgrounds in London, like, just didn't even get in touch, or, like, didn't even, like, I don't know, even, like, acknowledge it. I do think maybe there's a little less in middle-class backgrounds of, like, your grandparents being an actual practical part
less
of their upbringing.
Isn't it?
Like, I'm not saying middle-class people aren't close to their grandparents. Like, you know, I haven't done a study.
Yeah, you know, your face, guys.
But I'm saying, like, I think what I'm trying to say is people from this region were a little bit more like, fuck me, that is really tough, you know? Mm. And yeah, I think that's something I have a lot of affection for, like the way that they're part of your upbringing, if you do have grandparents who live in this region. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh my God, I don't want to offend any middle class people.
Nah.
I think they don't fucking talk to each other, do they? You know what I mean? It's a whole grief thing, isn't it? I think working class people are better at talking about grief and just talking.
Yeah, yeah.
Because we're better at just being like, are you okay? I'm really sorry that that's happened to you. Yeah, whereas I don't know if that's the same. Much more music across the UK.
And today on the show, we've got the Geordie Mams Choir joining us all the way from Sunny P. Law. Ladies, can you tell us and the listeners a little bit about yourselves?
Certainly, Graeme. It's Anne here, founder of the Geordie Mams Choir. So I decided to create the group when my son came home from university one Friday afternoon, a gay man.
And not just your son, Anne. Christine's young'un came home from the swimming gala, a lesbian.
A hot, you are right, Jill. And we just thought, well, that's fine, isn't it?
Absolutely fine, isn't it? You wrote a little song about it, didn't you, Anne? Or would you call it more of a poem?
More of a poem, And voila. The Geordie Mams Choir was born. Well, I'll not bore you with any more of the chit-chat. Let's get straight down to the good stuff.
Never. Me son's gone to uni. Dyed his hair blonde. He's dead. And that is-
Yeah.
But yeah, when I think about being proud to be English, for me, that means being proud that so many people have managed to come here, build a life here, and enhance our culture through what they've brought with them.
Mm-hmm.
And like, what I don't particularly understand about like the English pride,
National Front.
Yeah, like those kind of people who are like, or like our culture's being diluted by, you know, immigration or whatever. What I don't particularly understand about that is like, what are you on about? Our culture was already immigration.
Yeah.
Mm. Our culture's been immigration from the dawn of time.
Yeah.
Like, you know, God, no matter how far back you go, we've always been invaded by someone, like, or...
Or we've been doing the invasion.
Or we've been doing the invasion.
Mostly so, us doing the invasion.
Yeah.
No, so... Oh, God, I'm going to sound like a Nazi now. No.
No, you don't. What
I meant is, like, I mean, in a historical sense, if you go back far enough, you know, the French invaded us, and that's where, like...
Vikings.
And that didn't... And both massively influenced our language, influenced, mm-hmm. like, our traditions, our cultures. Literally, the idea of this pure English culture is absolute bollocks. Like, we're built on immigration. We're built on cultures from around the world coming here, or like us bringing them here, and like and then people having to settle and people having to mix stuff. Like, we're built on that, and this idea that like immigrants or asylum seekers or something, they're going to dilute our culture. Jesus Christ, like, honestly, I've got no patience for it.
No, me neither.
No patience for it whatsoever, because it's just wrong.
No,
it's just plain old wrong.
So my mom is Irish, so I am second generation. And when I talk to my mum about it, I'm much prouder to be Irish than I am any kind of Britishness.
Mm.
And I remember talking to my mum a bit about it, and she was like, I really see you and Ruth's my sister, as Irish. She was like, and I remember when I went to study abroad, my mum was like, I mean, you can tell people you're English and that, and you're from the UK, but like... But you're Irish as well. Like, aww. As if it's a little bit, I don't know, almost like safer. And because Irish people have immigrated all over the world.
Yeah.
So for instance, I have an Irish passport. So if I go to America, the immigration laws are totally different for me. Whereas with a UK passport, it's a bit more strict. But mm-hmm. it's because Irish people have immigrated all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm really, like, proud of that.
Mm.
And I feel I grew up with that, and mm-hmm. knowing that there is a world elsewhere.
I remember, like, when I was younger, I looked into my family tree and found out that my granddad's mom, I think, is Irish, and, like, moved here from there, and then that's when they all came over. And then I was thinking, like, I've clung on to that so hard for as much as I can, because I don't want to be English. I'd rather be anything else but,
mm-hmm.
and I don't want to like have all of my, yeah. And I think it goes back to what you're saying. It is like, it just feels nicer to be Irish, even mm-hmm. if it's like a 16th Irish or something.
Yeah,
Do you know what's really funny is like my sister, paid some money towards finding out our ancestry, like, tree. And she was, like, just praying that there'd be something interesting in our family tree. And it took a few weeks or something to come back. And literally, we have been here for a very long time.
Where's here? Time.
Where's here? Wall's End.
North Wall's End. One street in Wall's End, no, just like the northeast for a long time, and there's just nothing interesting to my family tree, which I thought was hilarious. And she was like trying to work out like if there was anything interesting in our blood, and there's absolutely fuck all, and it was hilarious.
Mm. So I do find that quite interesting,
but I actually find that more interesting.
Well, I'll tell her that angle. I'm sure. I don't think it'll help.
Yeah, I'd love to do my family tree, you know.
I really would
because I find migration throughout history such an interesting thing.
Yeah,
I find it absolutely fascinating. I love learning about it. I love watching Who Do You Think You Are and seeing like how their family have travelled and stuff. Each person is a little story of decades, centuries of migration, essentially. Yeah. I mean, not you, Brogan, but
not,
you know.
Not everyone else.
Me, though.
Yeah, yeah. And I find that so fascinating. Like, just, I would love to look at my family history one day. My mum doesn't want us to, though.
Dark secrets.
I know.
My mum was a bit like, I can just tell you.
I've got it written down on a post-it.
She was like, honestly, that I can just tell you.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm like, nah, I reckon there's.
And I know this sounds a little bit morbid, but I've noticed recently, because I have like pictures of like my great grandma when she was younger, and I have like things that were owned by my great granda that I kind of marvel at, and I'm like, wow, like this is amazing. They're almost like not real people anymore. It's like they're these fictional characters, and I'm like, ooh, like what were they doing back then? And I always wonder, a little bit morbidly, when I am dead, like that picture I took in like Richard and Dee's Park on a bench, like will my great great grandchildren be like,
God,
hey, yeah. look at her, look at my great grandma having a great time.
Well, because
I wonder
what
she was like.
What they'll have is ample.
Yes.
Selfies.
And yes.
And ample, like, Snapchats.
Oh,
They'll actually have far too many photographs.
God, they wouldn't want to look at them, would they? Yeah.
They'll be inundated with them.
They'll probably be sick of my face then.
Yeah.
Oh, it won't be the same, will it? Because I've got, like, one, like, crumpled up little photo.
Yeah,
and then they'll just have, like, just like a full album
of
my face, and they'll be like, oh, I'm sick of fucking
great grandma.
Like a drawer by memory.
Wait, this all came from talking about the EDL. EDL to photo albums.
Well, thank you, National Front.
Oh yeah, we're talking about the negatives of pride, aren't we?
Well, where weren't we?
I think that like it's weird because I feel like pride is like one of those things where it's kind of like it's hard to get the balance. Mm. Like it's really good to be prideful and proud of yourself and like love where you're from and celebrate that. But you don't need to do it in a way that says I'm better than you. And because I think that I'm the best, that therefore discredits everything that you are.
Mm.
And I think that that's like, it's like being a sore winner, isn't it? Like when you win something and it's like, you lost.
Well, I think it's insecurity more than pride.
Yeah.
I think when you have them, let's just call them what they are, racist, basically clinging to this false idea of Englishness.
Yeah.
Mm.
It's insecurity, really. Mm-hmm. It's insecurity over like not really knowing who they are and, you know, not really having a place in the world or whatever. And it'd be different for, you know, racists come in many shapes and forms. but like, yeah, no, it they'll be different, be a nuanced array of reasons. But I think sometimes the pride that people display, I look at it and I'm like, that's not even pride. That's just insecurity. That's you. That's you not feeling confident about your place in the world. And you're shoving other people down.
Yeah, absolutely. Just to go off what you're saying, Jackie, and that nationalism, it's it keeps people rooted and keeps people very safe.
Mm.
I said on the Wrath podcast that I was at one of the protests in London about Kill the Bill and violence against women, and there was tons of police officers stood around the Winston Churchill statue, which I see as purely divisive, because then because quite frankly, I don't really want to take that down. I'd really just rather end violence against women and kill the bill.
Yeah.
I'd rather do that than take down the Winston Churchill statue, to be totally honest. But I feel it's quite a divisive move to put 10 police officers around that statue. And it's then almost, I feel like stuff like that really just fuels the hatred between the left and the right, because then
A photo can be taken of that.
Exactly. Yeah, and then they're like, oh, you'll protect statues, but not women. And it's like, well, it's almost as if I feel like the government want to create this divisiveness, and rather than having a conversation about insecurity and about safety, which is where a lot of this stuff comes from, rather than having that, they'll just be like, no, you're a racist, or no, you hate Winston Churchill. Yeah, it's like these
why do you hate our history?
Yeah, it's these two opposing heads, and I think it's fueled by something that's very toxic, but also very prevalent.
It's that whole like divide and conquer thing, isn't it? Of like, you know, there's already like the north-south divide, and like then you've got the rich and the poor divide, and then you've got like the people of color and the racist divide, and like it's all these different splits that's almost like, as long as, well, the world, to be honest, is like split up and like having different wars against each other within our own country or planet, like as long as that's still happening, the government can do whatever the fucking hell they want to do, because not everyone is standing together and saying, actually, you know what, this is wrong and we want change. Like, because everyone has so many different opinions, and the left and the right and all this, everyone hates each other. And no matter what the other person says, there's this thing of like, well, I'm going to disagree with you because historically we haven't agreed. So I think that like we're at a point now where we're trying to become a bit more like tolerant of each other. And I think that the pandemic's helped with that, because I feel like people have kind of listened more. But at the same time, I also feel like we're going backwards of like, it's so split and like so divided that it's not nice anymore.
No. I totally agree that it totally works in the government's favour if we all hate each other.
Yeah.
And I think everyone should keep a weather eye on them because I honestly think they like Tories own the media and they stoke the fire, and it's all just very convenient that we're all shouting at each other while they're passing bills that ultimately silence people.
Yeah.
But I think what for me was so interesting about Kill the Bill specifically was that there was a lot of people on the far left who opposed it, because the police, it's obviously an abuse of power, and defund the police. And just to give some context, it is a bill that it's now been passed in Parliament, but it was to give the police more power. And they already have, I think, a lot of power. And it was to effectively, to give them more power to allow
in
more.
In relation to protests.
Yeah, in relation to protests. It was... It would pass through laws that meant that you couldn't shout at a protest. It would give the police more power for stop and search. It meant that people from the traveller community were also quite at risk from this bill being passed through. But I think what I found quite interesting about this bill is that people on the far left really oppose it, obviously, because people on the left would like the police to have fewer powers. However, also a lot of people on the right also don't agree with that. They don't think the state should have any more involvement because they like to protest too. A lot of very people who are very right-wing and very anti-lockdown and anti-vax, all of those are quite right-wing as well. So what was quite interesting about Kill the Bill was when I went on the marches for it in London, was there was almost like the right-wing march and the left-wing march.
Yeah,
when really
crazy.
We could have actually just came together and been like, actually, you have those views and I don't agree with them. You have those views and I don't agree with them. Rather than like shouting stuff, let's work together.
Did you notice any harmony between the two groups at all?
No. To be honest, Jackie,
because
I think what I found quite irritating, so I was, just to give some context, I was on the left side of this.
Not a Nazi.
I'm not anti-lockdown or anything like that. So I was on the left side of things, and they were shouting, fuck the Tories. But there's actually a lot of Tories were opposing the bill.
Yeah.
And obviously it's a protest. It's not really a space for nuance. It's a lot of just... here's a saying and I'll shout it.
Yeah.
But yeah, he was like, oh, actually, fuck the Tories. It's like, I love shouting fuck the Tories. But also, ultimately, there were a lot of Tories that were on that side, on our side. And yeah, it would have been lovely to see some kind of meet in the middle.
Yeah.
But I also don't know how that exists, because I'm aware that both parties both strongly opinionated. And also, like... I guess there's also a thing about safety as well. That's good to acknowledge. Shouldn't just be like, let's all hold hands and go in a circle with each other.
So I'm just going to change speeds here real quick. We've talked a lot about the National Front and being proud of where you're from, being proud of being a fanny. And I would like to share something with you guys. I've struggled to be proud of myself when I was younger and to be proud of who I am. And it's probably because I didn't really know who I was and didn't really know what I liked and stuff. Whereas now I feel more proud of myself than ever. And I feel like it's because like I understand it. And when I was growing up, I always felt wrong. Like I felt like something was wrong and I knew that my brain was different, but I didn't know how it was different or why it was different and I didn't understand it. And then when I was diagnosed with the learning disability that I've got, which is slow processing disorder, I started to like understand myself more and understand like what I needed, why my brain worked the way it did. And then like I started becoming more proud of myself because I sort of understood it more. And I think that there's like a correlation, and it's kind of what we were saying before about like the National Front, about how it's kind of like, it's like a lack of understanding that makes you proud, but then also my lack of understanding didn't make me proud. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And
maybe it's when you were younger, that lack of understanding equaling a lack of pride might have fed into other kind of behaviours, you know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely. Like, I was always very naughty and distracted in school. Mm-hmm. And I mean, that's probably the undiagnosed ADHD that I've got. But I think that, like, now that I'm understanding more about myself, I feel like I can be more proud of myself and like be like, well, this is who I am. It's like that self-acceptance thing that we've kind of like talked about a little bit in different episodes of like, rather than like body positivity, you'd rather just have body acceptance just because it seems easier. And I think the other thing as well was like, I didn't know which part of the queer I was. I didn't know if I was bisexual or anything. I mean, I know we spoke about this, but I do feel like since finding that label, I can be proud of it now. And my mum was actually, she had a conversation with us the other day and she was asking us kind of about the difference between like non-binary and drag. But then she was, it was funny, she was saying, yeah, I was just wondering what I would be these days, like who I would be, like what I would class as, and that like generational like difference between like liking a label or not liking a label or whatever. But also like I just found it like quite funny and sweet that like she's kind of thinking about what she would be if she wasn't married and had been for the last 15 years kind of thing, like thought it was quite interesting.
I really like identify with the once you understand yourself a bit better, it's much easier to be proud of yourself.
Yeah.
I've had anxiety for a long time. And I've, only in the past couple of years, I've got much better at managing it. And in getting better with managing it, I think I have discovered a pride in myself that comes from kind of like accepting who I am, not fighting against it, not fighting against the you know, the things that make me predisposed to anxiety. They're like, oh, well, that's just part of who I am, and they come with positives, they come with negatives. Much easier to be proud of that. But yeah, my when I was kind of like learning these techniques that I've got now to help with my anxiety, my mom had this lovely, lovely saying. We're all familiar with Harry Potter.
Yes. Know him well.
Well, yeah, whenever I was worrying about whether I'd be able to manage with something and or cope with something, something she'd say to us is, well, you got to remember, you've coped with stuff like this before, and that's your Patronus. You've seen yourself do it, so you know you can do it.
Oh.
Might not be the exact same, might not be the exact, just because, you know, wasn't the exact same for Harry, you know? But, you know, you've seen yourself perform the Patronus, so you know you can do it again.
What am I saying that?
It's lovely, that's isn't true. It? And yeah, I think that's a very long-winded way of saying when coming to like accept who you are and the things that you struggle with and the like how your mind works and all that. I think that there is an element of like, you know, you have to look back and see what you've kind of like achieved, and you have to look back and see what you've kind of learnt and struggled with, and
Yeah, going off that, just made us think there is that, like, all the way through school I felt stupid and thick and like that because I didn't get it. I didn't understand what was going on half of the time. And then, like, coming out of school and, like, being diagnosed in university, I was like, I got really angry when I was first diagnosed because I was like, well, if I knew this in school, I could have had all of this support. I would have had extra time for all of my exams. I would have had, you know, more help when it came to revision and all of this. And then I was like, but you know what? I did it by myself without all of that help. Mm-hmm. And, like, that made me realise, actually, I'm way smarter than I give myself credit for because, like, being smart isn't necessarily about getting your times tables right. It's about, you know, how do you adapt and how do you, like, get through it? And it's like, I became more proud of my disability when I realised, actually, you know what? It doesn't mean that I'm any different or any less smart than... sounds less smart anyway. Any less smart than anyone around me, do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And as neurodivergent people, I think it's really hard to feel smart and intelligent. Yeah. And we talked a bit about doubt yesterday, and like I think especially because we're currently recording a podcast, it's quite intimidating to mm-hmm. feel like to make sure that you're being articulate and that your points are coming across mm-hmm. well, and like when you're neurodivergent, that's like it's like a different level on yeah. top of an anxiety. You have another level. Yeah. It's quite strange. I wouldn't change it. Wouldn't
no,
change it for the world.
Neither, no.
But yeah, and getting diagnosed is also like, because I was diagnosed when I was 7, but I really rejected it.
Mm.
And I was like, I don't need a laptop. I don't need any extra time. I don't need any of this stuff, which is really quite silly looking back, because it was just so much, and I was just wanted to be like normal and just wanted to be able to learn stuff like other kids could
yeah.
and just to be able to do it like everyone else can. But actually, I think the way that we do stuff is much more interesting.
Yeah.
I think as well, like, I think as a society, we measure intelligence in a really bad way.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this talk about, like, how with coronavirus, obviously teachers have had to just give out exam results, which I don't think is actually a bad thing at all.
Mm.
I really don't. I can appreciate there has to be a standardized measure for everything. Yeah, whatever, we move. But, like, I think teachers know their kids best.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, you know, it puts so much pressure on teachers to do exams. It puts so much pressure on kids. And it's actually not that good of a measure of intelligence. Like, we also, as a society, we seem to forget that emotional intelligence is so important.
Absolutely,
as well.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think you can't, what's the sense? I'm going back to sayings again. Is there something about, like, if you measure a fish by its ability?
Can't make a fish climb a tree and expect it to perform the same as a chimp or something.
Yeah, yeah. Like if you think everyone's not what it is. If you think there's one way for everything to climb a tree,
mm-hmm.
yeah, you got yeah. everything to climb a tree.
I'm pretty sure didn't Einstein say that?
Yeah, it was something to do with Einstein.
Also, neurodivergent.
Mm. Yeah, yes,
oh,
yeah.
Oh, keeping on theme.
He didn't finish school, did he?
I don't know.
Probably not.
Don't know about that, like.
But yeah, no, intelligence comes in like loads of shapes and forms. And I know some people who are dead book smart, like really book smart, and like, you know, went to great universities. But Jesus Christ, like they're not emotionally intelligent whatsoever, or they're not, like, for all that book learning, like they still talk in a way that they think they should, because that sounds smart rather than just like knowing their own mind.
Mm. You know what I mean? I wonder if there's like a correlation between that, because I know a few people who are, I mean, just speaking from personal experience, but the people I know in my life who are very, very, like you said, book smart, intelligent, would get a very IQ, very high IQ score, are almost lacking in emotional intelligence,
mm-hmm.
and kind of struggle with, you know, picking up signs from people,
mm-hmm.
like based on their like emotion or their thought process or stuff like that. And mm-hmm. I wonder if there is, I don't know,
yeah.
like
yeah.
a correlation between that, but I'm not the one to say.
Mm-hmm.
I think so much of emotional intelligence is admitting when you're wrong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And from people who are proud, don't admit when they're wrong. I don't know. Do you know people like that?
Yeah.
I do.
Oh, yeah. There is such a, like, intelligence to being able to reflect on your own in ways that you could have done something differently, in ways where you just didn't understand someone, or in ways where like you were just wrong. Like there is such an emotional intelligence to be able to reflect on that.
Also admitting when you don't know something.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
I've started doing that. I've been like, well, actually I don't know anything about that, so I'm not going to make a comment. Because like I think there's so much pressure to like know everything and be up to date with everything and, you know all of the sides of the argument for everything. It's like, it's impossible. So
it's exhausting.
Yeah,
as well.
Just being able to say, actually, you know what? I don't know what you're on about. Could you let me know, please? Or, you know, it's quite powerful.
I also think asking for help as well. Like, I think, again, personal experience, but I know a lot of, like, older men and maybe more typically men in general who are... You know, they are linked to the kind of proud where it's like, oh no, I can climb up this ladder. I know I've got a bad leg and I've, you know, I had a car crash the other day, but no, I'll don't you worry, I'll get up this ladder. And it's like that kind of proud where it's like almost being worried to show vulnerability.
Yeah.
And it's like you can't have any... Like, and capability as well. Like, you need to present yourself as, like...
Yeah.
Completely, like, sustainable and completely capable of doing whatever, not having to rely on other people. I definitely feel like maybe that is a generational thing.
I think it's a generational thing.
I feel like our generation is much better on that.
But didn't you mention something, Jackie, about an old lady on the metro?
Yeah, there was an old lady on the metro who... When she got on, there was a seat available right next to her when she'd come through the door. But she had her eye on a booth that was halfway down the metro. And bless her, like she couldn't really walk. But she was bloody well going to walk to that booth while the metro was swaying about. And of course, she nearly fell over. And I caught her and I was like, oh, pet, do you want to sit down here in this seat just here? She was like, no, I want that booth over there. And I said, all right, come on then, we'll walk all the way down. And I walked her down and stuff. But mind you, that's a kind of pride in old people that I don't particularly begrudge. I mean, sometimes I do. Sometimes when it becomes
detrimental to...
So yeah, when it becomes detrimental to them, you know, like sometimes if you kind of get like a grandparent or something to like take their medicine or go to the doctors or whatever, like you're a little bit like, well, it really would be good if you did, you know, like...
do try.
But you know, I don't particularly begrudge like... In like older people, them just because they're older, not necessarily doing things the easier way. Like I can see how that would be patronising to feel like you always have to do things the easier way just because you're older.
Yeah,
I do find that like a lot of older people like do refuse to take themselves to the doctors. My stepdad's mom recently, she was very jaundiced for like a few days. And everyone's kind of like, are you all right? But she felt fine in herself. And she was a very active woman, very involved within our church, very involved, like, she used to do, like, brownies all the time and guides and stuff. And, like, the whole community knows her. And she looks after her husband, who's, like, a little bit older than her. And she was jaundiced. And, like, we're all kind of like, Grandma, you need to go to the hospital. Like, you need to go to the doctor and get it checked out and stuff. And it's a bit morbid, but she finally went to the doctors and they've given her a few months to live because she's got terminal cancer.
Oh God,
but it's
so
that like
serious,
no man. it's all good, but it's that like thing of like that generational thing of like not wanting to admit that there's something wrong with you because you've had this like very exciting, fully like lived to the fullest kind of life, and now you've got someone else who depends on you. It's almost like... And I was thinking to myself, I was like, do you know what? When I'm 80-something, I probably won't go to the doctors because if there's something wrong with us, but I feel all right, I'll be like, I don't care if I die.
It's totally understandable, isn't it? Like I say, like from the previous conversations we just had, like I completely understand how you get there, how you do become like that kind of proud, because I totally agree. I think when I'm like, fucking 70, I'm like, oh fuck off, do I need to do this? You know, I'm gonna go fucking scale that mountain.
I'll be the same,
so I totally understand. But it's just, yeah, when it leads to like detrimental
it's
things,
like
you just want
to
shake
go
them,
to the doctor.
You?
Like, yeah. Yeah. So I don't go to the doctor now. And I'm only 23.
Yeah.
So God knows what I'm going to be like.
But actually, you know what? On the topic of not going to the doctor, so it's not even just a generational thing. I think a lot of men do struggle with it.
Yeah, it's a big societal problem. I think it's why they do the like adverts for checking your prostate. And it's always with on like when football matches are on, because they know loads of men will tune in.
Mm. It would be so interesting to look at the statistics for men that go to therapy and women that go to therapy. I haven't seen them, so I could be wrong. And if I am, write in. But I bet...
Don't write in.
...that men going to therapy is so much lower than women going to therapy.
But I think women are socialised to do work on themselves in a way that only men are.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
I think women are very much socialised to talk to each other and to go to therapy and to make those positive changes in their lives, whereas I don't know how much men are encouraged to do that. My son's a
gay. Just got to talk about the gays now.
I mean, like, I suppose in relation to the LGBTQ plus community, Pride is an actual time.
Event.
It's a time of the year, isn't it?
It's a month.
Yeah, yeah.
Whole month.
Yeah. What I have to say about that is... I don't understand why we're only allowed a month. When straight people are allowed to be proud of being straight the whole year. I get why we do it. I do get why we do it. I love Pride. Love going to it. Heaps of fun. But I feel like, as a queer person, I feel like Pride has become something for straight people and cis het people to say that they are an ally or that they support this community. It's more about that than it is about coming together and celebrating and lifting up each other. Like, over the past few years, I just haven't gone to Pride because I've seen on like my social media like all of these people who like, yeah, okay, so I don't know what their gender or sexuality is or where in the community they fit, and I was a straight person once, but I don't know, it feels very like what's the word, like capitalized. Like, it just seems like an event that people make money from. Like, a couple of years ago, Ariana Grande was performing at one of the Pride, and tickets for Pride went up. Like, so they were like 20 quid, and because Ariana Grande was performing, they were 80 quid. Mm. It's like that's really inaccessible for like a lot of people. Yeah. So I don't know, I just...
And it also completely changes like what that event is about.
Yeah.
On the one hand, if people are running those events and running those events so that the community can come together, well then actually, like, you know, I do want the people running those events to gain a wage from it.
Yeah.
You know, yeah.
Yeah, I
but
get that.
If actually that event is not about bringing the community together anymore, and it's actually...
about seeing Ariana Grande.
Yeah, yeah. Well, then actually, I don't really see why you should be making a wage from just sticking Pride on it then.
Yeah.
Mm. And actually, you know what? If Ariana Grande is going to perform here, I'd much rather the money went to charities that like helped the LGBTQ plus community. Yeah. Like,
I mean, I don't know if like if a percentage of that £80... went towards like Stonewall or other LGBT plus charities. But it's just kind of like the principle of it.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And the first Pride was a protest, wasn't it? The first Pride was a protest. Yeah. It's like, pay 80 quid to have a protest. Yeah. It feels like it misses the mark slightly. And
I mean, like, you know, if it's changed and it's not so much a protest anymore, if it's also about celebration, well then that's fair enough. But yeah, no, I totally see what you're saying is about actually there are definitely companies that have realised that Pride is a wonderful thing that they can sell.
Yeah.
Mm. Unfortunately, when things become great selling points, they become less accessible to the people that they were originally set up for, don't they?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
I saw even this morning Costa are doing a Pride latte. So like the milk in it is rainbow coloured.
Why?
How can a liquid be rainbow coloured? Won't it just eventually go brown?
Food colouring.
You know, like the when you get a latte and you get the leaf. You get the leaf. I think the idea is then that the latte leaf
is going to be rainbow.
It would take you fucking ages to get that coffee, wouldn't it?
Oh, God,
you ordered a fucking coffee and you'd take, like, you just see them doing their thing for like 10 minutes.
Oh, I just don't see the point. What's the point?
I know.
Who are you helping? Mm.
And it's outside of Pride Month, so I don't know if they're being like, oh yeah,
we really celebrate
Pride all year round, ladies and gents, and like, non-binary folk.
Yeah.
They're probably not saying that.
Yeah, they're probably not saying ladies and gents.
They're probably saying ladies and gents, yeah.
Yeah, but still got gendered toilets.
I know, yeah.
But it's still like a big thing. Guarantee they'll have the highest sales they've had in X amount of months. I don't know. It's just weird. Yeah. It just annoys me.
One thing that really fucks me off in Pride Month, Skittles have done it for a few years. They basically, because Skittles are obviously very colourful and they have Taste the Rainbow, as they're saying.
Mm-hmm.
So what they do is they just take all the colour out of their packaging and it's just black and white and all the Skittles are just white. And they're like, because only one rainbow matters in Pride Month. And you're like, what you've just done there is you've just made your product like way more visible. Like on the shelves, if you think about it, like on the shelves, like confectionery and stuff is always really colourful. So that what you've just done is you've just made your product more visible. I'm sorry. Like, no, that's just you selling stuff. Like, that's just like you know, hats off to you. Like you've found a way of making your product more visible and more likely to be picked up. But no, like you're not in support of Pride. You've just found a way of making your
sell Skittles.
Mm. You've just found a way of selling Skittles better. And I just, you know, and maybe some people would say like, oh, well, can't it be both? And I'm like, well, no, not really.
No, actually, no.
Like, no, I'm sorry, that what's important to them is that they've sold more Skittles.
I also find it funny that the whole thing of like the queer community and pride being the root of all sin and like the church not liking the gays, but they do now. They don't mind them now. Some of them don't
in
mind
moderation.
Them now. Yeah, in moderation. And I just find that link funny that, like, we've called queer people, their event is pride, but that's a bad thing. It's just connections.
Sin.
Yeah. Sin, you know.
Seems like pride to many communities is an antidote to, like, oppression.
Yeah, I think so.
It's almost like reclaiming something, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's like the queer community have reclaimed a lot of words. And
queer.
Yeah, being one.
And,
you know, lots of communities have reclaimed certain words and stuff, and it's almost like pride has been reclaimed from the sin that it used to be.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? And don't get me wrong, like, we've talked about ways that pride is still, you know, harmful and, you know, still something you need to check yourself on, especially in kind of, like, an arrogance way.
Mm-hmm.
But it's interesting that, like, actually pride has been reclaimed as something that actually no, I can use that how I want.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what we do at the end of every episode is we come up with a definition, a fanny definition of the sin.
So what do you think? Defining pride.
Learn about yourself, reclaim it, and party.
Learn about yourself, reclaim it. And party.
But don't charge 80 quid to get in.
I was going to say, unless Ariana Grande is there, but she's there all the time.
No, but even if she is, stop charging the gays 80 quid to get into their own party.
Have a nice time.
I'm not doing it, Jackie.
Stop it, Lydia.
Okay, so our definition is...
Learn about yourself, reclaim it, have a party, don't pay £80 to get in. Yeah?
Yeah, I like it.
10 out of 10.
And I think that's the end of it. So
I think that's the end of it.
Thank you very much, and see you next week.
Thank you.
Thank you. Oh, I love you. Bye.
I love you.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye.
Take care.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Match Made in 7. Join us next Monday where we will be talking about sloth. Subscribe to our channel to be the first to listen. You can find the accompanying playlist to this episode on our Spotify. Just search Your Aunt Fanny. We're also at Your Aunt Fanny on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Sound design and music by Jeremy Bradfield.